Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm an entrepreneur on my second business, a mentor, an author, wife to a fellow entrepreneur, and mother to a magical little girl. On my podcast, I explore topics that fascinate me that will help you unlock ideas to rise even higher in your life. Myself and my special guests will be talking entrepreneurship and how to build better businesses, organization and figuring out how to get more shit done quicker and smarter, staying in touch with our soul, and how to blend business babies with real babies. Let's jump in to this week's episode. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Lorraine Murphy Show. As always, it is fabulous to have you listening in. And thank you to all of you who have listened so far to this business season. It has been absolutely incredible to see the downloads on this season. It's been really, really exciting. And yeah, just super grateful for all of you who've given me your ears and also taken the time to give me feedback on the first few episodes of this season. It just, yeah, it makes my day hearing what your biggest takeouts have been from the episodes. And it makes, yeah, all the creation worthwhile. So thank you so much to all of you for taking the time to get in touch with feedback. Okay, so this week, we are almost halfway through this season of the podcast. And as always, I wanted to make sure I included a window for me to answer any of your burning questions. And this season is no different. So this week's episode is me getting back to quite a few questions that came through over Instagram over the last while. So I'm going to actually jump straight in. I'm not going to do a lengthy introduction to this episode because I'm really keen just to dive straight in. As I said, there are quite a few questions and I want to make sure that, I answer them in a pacey way. So I'm actually going to jump right in now. So first question comes from The Rural Health Co. on Instagram, and they asked the best ways to test or measure a service or product idea to ensure it is viable. So with this one, I would 100% say figure out what your MVP is ASAP. Lots of acronyms there. So your MVP, if you're not familiar with this term, you could also call it your lean startup. So it's your minimal viable product. So the most basic thing that you need to put together in order to get it out to market and to get people to start buying it from you. So your MVP, and I have actually created MVPs in the past that were PowerPoint presentations that I took into a potential corporate client, showed them the PowerPoint of an idea that I was working on, and they said yes, and then we went and built it from there. That was in my first business in the Remarkables Group. So with your MVP, I find that quite a common pitfall for particularly early stage entrepreneurs is that they will spend their life savings, a huge amount of energy perfecting some kind of a product or service. And the problem is that it's never actually been tested by anyone before. So really trying to keep it as simple as possible. I'm a big fan of KISS, keep it simple, stupid, just to get something out there that's going to test your idea. And I know for me, an example of an MVP in my current business was a few years ago, I would do an annual boot camp in January, which is where I guided people through their annual goal setting. And I was doing that event in Sydney. The previous year, I'd done it across five different cities, as in traveled to five different cities to deliver the workshop. And when Lexi was born, so she was 6 months old, I said, okay, I don't really want to be traveling to five different states for this year. So I said, I'm just going to do one event in Sydney. And I had so many requests from people to create an online version they actually asked me to record that session. And I just couldn't figure out how I'd do that properly and create a really nice user experience. So I said, okay, I'll record it. I'll pre-record the program and then create like a virtual ticket that people can buy. So it was essentially my first online program was as a result of that, those requests. And I engaged Greg, who was a kind of startup videographer, and I had absolutely no idea how to do an online program. I didn't know if I needed to use particular software, how we're going to host it, would I do it like as a stage thing or just give people the content and let them kind of drive their own pace, determine their own pace. I just had no idea. And it was a pretty simple program. I filmed for a half a day with Greg. We edited together, and it's actually looking at it now is actually really, it's pretty good content. But that was, God, 3 years ago now. And since then, of course, I've been on a massive journey when it comes to the online program side of things. So my whole point here is get to your MVP, your minimal viable product. The only way you're ever going to know if your idea is viable or not is if people are going to prepared to pay for it. So that's what you want to get to as quickly as humanly possible. You want to get to a point where you have got something that you can sell to people and you're testing your idea by them actually buying whatever it is that you're selling. So best way to test product service, get to your MVP, get selling it and see if people buy. And then of course, get the feedback then from those early customers. Now there was a very similar question to this, which I'm going to jump to as a kind of a side hustle question as well. Okay. And this is from Lisa, and Lisa says, how do I know what to actually focus on, especially if it's more of a side hustle than a main hustle? And I really, really love this question. I'm going to answer it quite similarly to how I answered that first question. If I was starting a side hustle right now, and I was in paid employment, the number one thing that I would be focusing my energy and time on would be testing my product. Is this product viable? Is it something that people are going to buy? That's the number one thing that I would be doing. So think about how can you, if you are in a side hustle situation, and of course, you know, business is like anything in life, you could almost go down a massive rabbit hole of doing everything yourself or doing every single idea. And God knows, one of my biggest plagues is I just have too many ideas when it comes to business. So we could spend endless hours doing all of the things. And it's so tempting to do that because we're so passionate about our idea. However, what's really, really important is that we test our product, because ultimately, if you're planning on making this side hustle your main hustle and one day handing in your notice and going and working for yourself full time, you're not going to be able to do that until you know that you've got a solid offer. Not a perfect offer, but a solid offer, one that you know people are prepared to part money with in order for you to, you know, cover your living expenses and keep the cat in cat food and the kids in baby food and so on. So think about what is that how can you test your product? And that would be the number one thing that I would be doing if I was building a side hustle right now. Now, the other thing that I wanted to say is that there's no such thing as a successful business if no one's buying what it's selling. So you can't have you can have a side hustle that's a passion project. But as I said, if ultimately one day you want to make this your main hustle, the key factor in you being able to do that is if it's going to be able to financially support you in whatever lifestyle you're accustomed to right now. So think about how can you be testing your product, because until you do that and you know you've got a solid product, you're not going to be able to make it your main hustle, if that's, of course, what you want to do. The other thing I would be focusing on as well, it's almost like the cycle of listening. So listening to your community, listening to the problems that people have. And I'm a very, 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 very big believer in the idea that successful businesses successfully solve problems. So any successful businesses that I see around me are businesses that have solved a problem. So I know when I started my first business, the Remarkables Group, there was two problems. One major problem was that bloggers or influencers wanted to make money from their content and they didn't know how. And the other side of that was that corporates, so brands, wanted to access these influencers but didn't know how. So my first business, The Remarkables Group, came in almost like as the go-between of these influencers who wanted to monetize their platforms and with the brands who were prepared to provide money to actually get influencers on board for their brands. So there was almost like a dual-sided problem that I was solving then. So what you want to be doing is, if you're building a side hustle and you want to know what to be focusing on, you want to be focusing on listening to the problems that people are having, listening to the problems that your community is having, and listening to feedback on your product. Once you've listened, you want to iterate. So iterate. You want to get shit done as quickly as possible and not doing it badly, but you don't want to be perfecting stuff right now. You just need to be getting something out in market to test it. And that's the only way you're going to be able to test is if you're iterating and getting it out there. And then test it, see how that iteration's going, get the feedback, go back to listening again, then go back to iterating and testing again. So it's a constantly evolving process. And I do this with every single program I do, for example, or every single event. It's constantly, okay, how do I make it better next time? So listening to the feedback, iterating next time, and then testing that iteration and going on that kind of self-perpetuating cycle. So that is something else I would say. The other thing I would say as well is, as I already mentioned, it can be very tempting just to fling everything at everything when we are creating a side hustle or a business because we're just so passionate about it. And I think what's really, really important is to keep it simple, stupid. You know, KISS, when I talked with the MVP, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. So I really do see a lot of entrepreneurs, particularly when it's their first venture, over-egging the shit out of it. So just making it way more complex, way more complicated than it needs to be. So really keeping it simple will just mean that you can make the max use of the time that you do have to devote to your side hustle. The other thing I would say as well is to be fanatical with staying on track with your plan. So as some of you may know, and I might do an episode at some stage, might not fit into the season, but on my business planning process. So I work to annual plans in my business, and then I break them down into 90-day plans, which I fine tune every quarter before the quarter kicks off. So it's being fanatical about staying on that plan, because I'm a big sufferer myself of bright, shiny thing syndrome. And I think many entrepreneurs are. I think that's why we get into entrepreneurship a lot of the time. And it's very, very easy for me to get distracted by the next bright, shiny thing and pull myself away from the track that I was on. So I think it's being absolutely fanatical about keeping yourself on track. If you said this is going to be your big focus for this quarter, then being consistent with that and making it happen. There's plenty of time to be introducing new ideas once your business is more established and you've got more of a handle on where it's at and where you're going with it. And I know for me, for example, in the Remarkables group, I just focused on influencer branded content. That's all we did for 2 years. And there were so many ideas I had in that time. And I just didn't allow myself to progress them because I knew that I needed to get this business established. And then at that point, then I started to explore different sponsorship properties and so on that we created as well. So I hope that helps that one. Okay. Where am I jumping to now? There are lots of questions here. I have so many notes here in front of me. Okay, I'll take a slight change of tack. So who asked this question? Rural Health Co as well. Top tips on finding and maintaining a sustainable pace in business for yourself, health, growth, and so on. So I think this is a very interesting one because I feel like I've gone through periods of being like, yeah, I'm really in my zone. This is good. Like everything feels like it's quite aligned in terms of I've got enough time for me, I've got enough time for Wade, I've got enough time for Lexi, I've got enough time for the business. But to be honest, those, as Wade would say, those times are rare as rocking horse shit. Generally, it feels like one area it needs to be prioritized in that particular kind of week, month, quarter than the other. So I know right now this week, as I'm recording this episode, Lexi is, she started school. So she started Montessori this week and she's going through her orientation week, which means that yesterday she did 45 minutes of school. That was her first day. Today it was an hour and a half. Tomorrow it's 2 hours. And then finally on Friday, then she'll be there for 4.5 hours. So this week has been, it's been Lexi. You know, she's been the priority. I was doing a jigsaw puzzle with her on the phone to my team when I was doing our weekly whip earlier on today. So I think something that has really helped me, and it may sound a bit kind of counterproductive and maybe a bit strange coming from me, but it's to accept that balance is unattainable. As I said, there's probably been weeks or maybe a month here or there that I felt like, oh, I've got it. I've got this balance that everyone talks about. But realistically, it doesn't happen very often. And I know next week, I mean, right now I feel like I'm in a very, very active time in my business. I've been doing a lot of one-on-one mentoring. There's a batch of products that I want to create in time for Christmas, which I'm really, really excited about. I'm hosting a retreat for my mastermind group in 3 weeks' time. I'm recording my audiobook in a couple of weeks' time for Get Remarkably Organized. Yeah, there's a lot going on. So I think trying to say, okay, I've got everything right in balance over the next month. I mean, I just think it's going to be unrealistic. And I think it's pressure that especially we women put on ourselves to find this balance thing that seems to be, you know, whereas rocking horse shit, as my dear husband would say. So instead, what I try and do is aim for micro balance. So instead of getting it all right every single kind of week or month, it's like, okay, how can I create some micro balance day to day? And some of the ways that I do that is to have my morning routine. So I'm a big fan of Hal Elrod's book, The Miracle Morning. So a really great thing for me in the morning is to do my 20 minutes of TM meditation, read my pull my oracle cards from my two packs, and also drink my lemon drink. And that feels to me like, okay, that was a good, you know, I've got my kind of micro balance sorted for the morning. And the other thing as well, I would say, is to be really efficient with your planning. So right now, for example, as I'm recording this, it's the last week of October. Jesus. last week of October, and I've got the rest of my year planned out. So I know the days that I'm going to be working on this podcast. I know the days that I'm going to be working on my social media content. I know the days that I'm going to be mentoring. I've even got my workouts scheduled right up until Christmas, until we go away for Christmas. So I think that's really, really, really helpful for me as well, is to be able to see when I'm going to be able to work on things. So I mentioned that I've been doing a lot of one-on-one mentoring, and I've been feeling like loving the mentoring, because that's like, oh my God, it's just the best. I love doing it. However, the opportunity cost to me mentoring is that there isn't as much time for me to work on my creative projects, to work on my business strategy and so on. I've got a launch coming up next month. So I think for me, just knowing when the time is booked in. So yesterday I had time booked in to work on my Monday Mentor, which is my weekly email that I send out. And I batched a whole batch of those. And I also batched a load of my content for social media and mapped out my content calendar for between now and the end of November. So just having that time booked in to create makes a huge difference for me. So I think, yeah, getting really structured around your time, I think will really help you feel that sense of sustainable pace. And also when you have blocked out your calendar and then you decide to say yes to yet another commitment, as I am prone to doing, as my team will be able to confirm. What it means then is when your calendar is actually booked out and it's up to date, you can actually say, okay, well, realistically, when am I going to work on this new thing? So I think that is a really big one that helps for me. The other thing I would say as well is to focus on the most highly leveraged activities that you can do in your business. So this is a bit too much to go into for the purpose of this answer. But I spend a lot of time with my business mentees identifying what their superpowers are, because ideally what we want to do in our businesses or even our careers is to structure as much of our day as possible, like 80% of our day as possible, around us being in our superpowers and not in the stuff that we're not good at, we don't enjoy, that we do slowly, and that we could easily delegate to someone else. So really focusing on what the most highly leveraged activities for you are in your business, I find, again, that helps me make it sustainable. And for example, for me, my superpowers in my business are creating content like this podcast, and also the mentoring and the coaching that I do, either if it's one-on-one mentoring or through my programs. And the other one as well is business strategy and innovation. So creating new shit, basically. They're my three superpowers. So my goal is to be doing those three things as much as humanly possible and giving everything else to my team to manage while I do those other things. So I think that's a huge difference. That makes a huge difference. And also not being afraid to delegate. I really do see this a lot with my mentees, just that kind of reticence to delegate. And that whole idea of, well, no one's going to do it as well as me, therefore I'm not going to give it to anyone else to do. And I think that that's fine. But the problem is we become bottlenecks in our own businesses. And also I think it's quite, and I need to be clear, I've done this myself in the past. There's people out there who are a hell of a lot better at us than doing certain tasks in our businesses. And I make it my life's mission to find those people and give them as much of my work to do as humanly possible. So I know for me in my business, for example, Danelle does all of my scheduling. She organizes all of my mentees. She sends out all the reminders for my different webinars and so on. And she is awesome at that. I am shit at that. And it just feels so good when you know that someone's got your back on the stuff that you're not so good at. So not being afraid to delegate, I think, is a really, really big one, because it's just not, depending on how big of a business you want or how busy a business you want and what your other commitments are in your life, it just wouldn't be sustainable for me to do the amount that I do if I didn't have a trusted team that are, you know, they've got my back and they're doing all the stuff that I'm really not very good at all. In fairness, I'm probably shit at a lot of things in my business. So that's what makes this sustainable for me. And I get this even from friends. If I catch up with them and I haven't seen them for a few weeks, they say, oh my God, I'm looking at Instagram, you're doing so much. But the fact is, I'm only doing the stuff that's visible. I've got a team of kind of, depending on how you look at it, I've got a team of 11 in my business, and they're the ones doing really the heavy lifting. I'm just kind of showing up and being Lorraine. And my whole life's work in my business is to show up and be Lorraine and give the rest to someone else. So that is my response to that one. Okay. Another question I had here was, how do I balance, who was this one? Shelley Morgs said, what's my advice on how to juggle a side hustle with the paid job while you build a hustle? Which I think is such a good question. Interesting, there's been a lot of questions on the side hustle in this for this episode, which is pretty cool. So with this one, I've got a few tips here. First of all, what I would definitely be doing, Shelley, is doing your mapping out your perfect week. So you can find my perfect week template on my website. If you go to my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au, and you'll see the resources at the very top, there's resources in the navigation bar at the very top. If you go there and just drop in your email address and you'll have access to all of my worksheets, you will find the perfect week template. And what I would be doing, if you've got a paid job and you're building a side hustle, I would be getting really, really clear on your week. So this perfect week template maps out everything from 5 a.m. in the morning to 12 p.m. Midnight, Monday to Sunday. I would be getting really clear on how you're going to allocate your time each week so that you feel like you're devoting enough time to both of those. So I would be really, really doing that perfect week exercise, because ideally what you want to do is you want to stay with just one hat on as much as possible. I was mentoring one of my Love Club members, Caitlin, recently. It's a live mentoring episode in the previous season of the podcast. And she was finishing off some paid employment, starting her own business, and also doing some freelance work as a graphic designer. And she was trying to smash, almost like to squash all three of those things into one day. And for me, that's just a recipe to crazy. Like that's, yeah, one way street to crazy. So what I suggested she do is get the perfect week exercise out and just focus, okay, how can she create blocks of time where she can be doing the contracting, where she can be doing the freelancing, she can be doing her paid employment, and she can be starting her business. So I would say the same to you, Shelley, and to anyone else who's really struggling to kind of fit all of the things in each week, is to do that perfect week exercise, because it gives a huge amount of clarity on where we can and should be spending our time. And also enables you to stay with just one hat as much as possible, just trying to keep one hat on, even if that one hat just goes on for 1 hour every morning from six to seven until the kids get up, for example, just trying to stay in that one hat, because I think otherwise it just gets a bit muddy and it's hard to find that momentum when you're jumping back and forth between the paid job and the side hustle. And the other thing I would say as well is to get your stakeholders on board. So what I mean by stakeholders is if you're in a main hustle, so you're in a job, it's going to be appropriate more for some people than it is for others, but it's to get your boss, get your colleagues on board, or whatever your side hustle is, because I think it would just help. That support, I think, would help a lot. And it would also, if you're, for example, going to say, okay, I'm going to drop down to a 4-day week and I'm going to work on my side hustle on a Friday. It just means that people have more visibility on what you're doing and can support you. And I guess they see the why more than you're just dropping down to 4 days. So I'd really be thinking about, how can you engage the support of your paid employment as well? As I said, that's going to vary from person to person as to how appropriate that will be or not. I fully get that. Okay. Okay, really, really good question came through from, who is this from? Sonia Gee. And Sonia says, do you have any tips for new moms who'd like to use my maternity leave to start a business? I'm finding it challenging to find the time to really get into it. How did you find the time with Lexi? Did you have any help aside from Wade? Okay, such a good question, Sonia. Thank you. And I've been asked this in various forms over the years as well, so I'm really, really glad you've asked this one. Okay, so just to clarify, I had an existing business when Lexi was born, so she's almost 3.5 now. So when Lexi was born, I'd been running the Remarkables Group for 5 years, so it was quite an established business. When I was 6 months pregnant, I brought a business partner into the business with me, so she bought into the business, and we pretty much spent 6 weeks. Or maybe it was 7 months pregnant, 6 or 7 months pregnant. We spent 6 weeks just on like an absolute mission to get her onboarded with the business, with the clients, with the influencers we were working with, and so on. So I did have an existing business. I just want to be really clear on that. So I took 3.5 months maternity leave from the business. However, in that time, I was writing my second book, Get Remarkably Organized. And we also traveled back to Ireland to spend some time with family. And myself and Wade had like a working week in London, a week or 10 days in London as well, because at the time I was exploring opening the Remarkables Group in the UK. And he had some kind of business interest there as well. So I was writing Grow. So I guess that's kind of like starting a business, writing a book, because it requires quite a bit of uptime. And then when Lexi was 10 months old, so I actually decided to sell the Remarkables Group to my business partner when Lexi was 6 months old. And then I spent about 6 weeks I pretty much just mentored for 6 weeks in my kind of inverted commas new business, which is the business you know now. And then myself and Lexi went to Bali for 2 months, and then we came back, and that's when I started this business properly now. So when I was doing that, Lexi was 10 months old, and I was planning that business, getting it started. Wade was pretty much living in Sydney. He would come back to us for the weekends. So yeah, I've got some experience of kind of fitting things around the babies. So I would say with this question, Sonia, and if you know, you're listening and you're in a similar position to Sonia as well, I think it very much depends on the business that you're trying to start. So it's going to be very dependent on, you know, how big is this business? How time consuming is it? Is it a business? I mean, I know a couple of my mentees who are running bloody successful businesses on pretty much 15 hours a week, if that. So, you know, is it going to be that kind of business, which is relatively low touch, but high margin? You know, it's going to depend, as I said, on the business. But I think more importantly, for any parents out there, and you will get this, it also depends on the baby. Because I know for me, when I was pregnant with Lexi, it was probably one of the better things I did as I was pregnant with Lexi. I just realized, you know, I have no idea what's going to happen here. I have no idea if we're going to have a difficult birth. I have no idea when this baby is going to arrive. I have no idea if I'm going to, you know, have some challenges post-birth, if the baby's going to be okay. I have no idea if we're going to have trouble breastfeeding. Hopefully I really did want to breastfeed, which happily you were able to do. Is the baby going to sleep? I just had absolutely, we didn't even know if we're having a boy or a girl. There was so much uncertainty when she was due. And what I really tried to do was just clear as much space as possible so that I could kind of adapt. I had enough space to adapt depending on what happened with birth, with my health, with the baby's health, and so on. So what I would say is that it really does depend on the baby. When, for example, Lexi was, I picked the Get Remarkably Organized book back up when Lexi was 10 days old. And she was having a very, I mean, newborns, many newborns sleep a lot, but I know even by the time she was kind of 3-4 months old, two, 3 months old, I was guaranteed pretty much that she would be asleep for 5 hours. She'd have a 3-hour sleep in the morning and she'd have a solid 2-hour sleep at least over lunchtime or in the afternoon. So that meant then that when I was planning on doing my writing, I could pretty much bank on that time to write while she was asleep. So that's a solid 5 hours. However, I fully acknowledge that's not going to happen for everyone. I know we have friends who have babies who sleep in 25-minute blocks all day, you know, all day, or they have a couple of naps a day. My sister's baby at the moment is sleeping some, like she said last week, he just didn't sleep all day, like didn't sleep at all. And this is like a 10-week-old baby, which is just crazy. So I think I really want you, Sonia, and everyone else who's in this position to manage their expectations, because it's totally going to depend on you and where you're at. It's going to depend on the business and the business that you're trying to create. It's going to depend on your baby and where they're at, and also all the other commitments. If you've got other kids, if you know how much your partner's working, how much support you have, all that kind of thing. So I guess what I'm saying here is I just want you to be very realistic and very kind to yourself on, you know, on how much you're committing to here. So what I would say in terms of practical advice would be to map out a timeline. So I'm a big fan of a timeline, as any of my mentees will know. So mapping out a timeline. So if you know, okay, this is what it's going to look like when this business is ready to go or it's successful. And then working back from there on a weekly timeline. As I said, I really do like working to 90-day plans, quarterly plans. I find that's a really nice window of time because it's enough time to get big things done, like getting a website launched or a business started, for example. But it's not so much time, like 6 months or a year, where you just kind of lose momentum. I think it's a really, really nice 90 days, I think, is perfect. And that's why I've planned like that for, God, 8 years now in my businesses. So what I would do is map out a timeline of what you want to achieve each week. And again, remembering, I would be very, very, very err on the side of realism with that. You know, there's almost like a baseline of I will get this done. Kind of think about it like your credit card. You know, you've got a minimum that you need to pay every month, but ideally you'll pay off more if you need to, for example. So it's about what's the minimum that you need to do in order to keep momentum going, but also being realistic and not putting yourself under so much pressure where you feel like you're setting yourself up to fail. Or if the baby doesn't sleep, or you go through a sleep regression, or you've got something else that you need to focus on that week, that you're going to fall so far behind that it's going to be incredibly difficult for you to get back on track. So I would timeline it out and treat your time to, yeah, be realistic. And then if you get bonus time, then that's, you know, sweet. You can get ahead on the following week or even the following 2 weeks work if you need to. And really just to emphasize with this, it's about slow and steady rather than big bursts of activity. You want a slow, steady momentum rather than smashing it all out over 2 weeks and then just being in a heap and exhausted 2 weeks later. And I know for me, when Lexi was 4 weeks old, I ended up in hospital with a breast abscess. So I felt something around the 2-week mark when she was 2 weeks old. and tried to treat it and didn't really get very far, and then ended up in hospital at 4 weeks. So I was hospitalized overnight, got a lot of antibiotics to treat this breast abscess. And I know looking back that that was my body telling me, okay, you're pushing it way, way too hard. So I would also, just listen to your body as well. And I mean, that's the most important thing, is your health and the health of the baby. So listen to your body. Your body's going to tell you if you're pushing it before anything else will. So think about slow and steady, rather than those big, those big sprints, I think is a much more sustainable way to manage it. The other thing I would say as well is to outsource what you can. This is not the time to be building your own website, for example. You really want to make sure that whatever time you are spending in this business, the side hustle, it's the stuff that, I've already talked about the superpowers. It's the superpowers. So I will do another episode, I think, on outsourcing, because there was a couple of questions on that. I like building a remote team. So I will do a separate episode on that. Just wanted to give that a hat tip here. This isn't the time to be figuring out new skills. It's about you getting in there, doing what you're really good at, and finding a team to support you. Even if that team is a VA that you have for 2 hours a week to help you with some setting up of email templates, for example. The other thing I would say as well is to focus. There's three areas that I would be focusing on that I would see is like the highest value, that time that you can be spending in your business when you've got limited time, like you do when you're on maternity leave. And first is to focus on your product, like getting your product or service sorted, getting that really, really clear. The second thing is sales, so selling that product. And then third would be community building. So they're the three things that I would be focusing on if I was you, Sonia, or anyone in a position where you don't have a huge amount of time to devote to your business, your new business idea. They're the three areas. So finessing, fine-tuning your product, like finalizing your product, selling, and community building. They're the three areas that I would focus on. Okay, I hope that one helps. Okay, next question. Oh my God, I've still got a lot to go. Okay. This is exciting. Thank you so much, everyone, for your questions. Okay, we've talked about that one. Okay, really good question here. Who is this from? This is from Yatta Bars. How to get started with no team, no money, just you, with the things you suck at, e.g. tech. Okay, so with this, I'm kind of going to touch on the previous point that I just made there in the previous question. I would be 100% saying outsource. So I think when we think the word outsource, we think, oh my God, it's going to cost me thousands of dollars. It's not, how am I going to manage it? I've never done this before. But in reality, you can get someone, for example, if it's setting up your MailChimp template, for example, I'm just going to give a really simple tech example. You know, if someone, I mean, identifying Yatta Bar, so you've identified that like me, you're a shit at tech. It doesn't need to be, you get someone on a 20-hour, 30-hour assignment. Like, it could just be putting on something like Upwork or another outsourcing platform and asking someone to set up your template and paying them like potentially $20, $30 to get it set up. That will take them probably 30 minutes to do, whereas it could take you 4 or 5 hours to do. And you're going to be hitting Google, YouTube, searching it, and it's not going to look anywhere near as good as what the person who actually knows what they're doing would do. So I would say, yes, we can say we don't have a team, but there's ways that we can kind of tap into a team as and when we want to. And honestly, for anyone who hasn't outsourced or tapped into these incredible freelancers that we have, we've got access to them globally with the benefit of tech. You really are missing out and probably doing things the really, 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 really long way around. That's totally unnecessary. So I would say, getting started with no team, totally fine. But if you really, really suck at something like tech, honestly, it's not worth the 100 hours that you're going to spend trying to research it. I would be finding someone online who can do it for probably $50 and just pay that to go away. And then you have so much more energy and also time to devote to whatever it is that you're really, really, really good at. Okay. But as I said, I will do a separate episode on outsourcing because I think it's, just based on these questions, it's a very, very popular one. Okay. Another question, which is such a good question, from Ashley Rath, PT. And she said, if you could start all over again, what's the one thing you would do differently? And I think I'm actually going to do an episode on this one as well. But what I would say is I would enjoy it more. And I know that's probably not something you would expect, but I think it's so, just the hundreds and hundreds of hours of anguish and the weekends lost because I got a shitty email from someone on a Friday afternoon, the panicking about cash flow and one thing I've learned is that it does all work out. Even if it feels at the time it's not working out for the better, ultimately it's bumping you onto a better path. So that's something I would do. And this has come up for me consistently as a theme on what I would want to improve on year on year. And it's just to enjoy the journey. The fact that particularly as women, that we have the freedom to start our own businesses, that we get to connect with the people we connect with, that we get to help the people we help, whether they're customers or clients, that we get to act as model for our children to start these businesses. I mean, I just think it's amazing. So something I would do differently if I was to go back to myself, Jesus, 8.5 years ago, as I started my first business, I would tell myself to enjoy it more. Like, it really is a terrifying, but it's, you know, there's so many highs as well. And as I said, just the fact that we can access that as women, particularly, I really don't take that for granted. So that's something I would say, but I will do a whole episode on that one. I think it's a really good one to explore, kind of lessons to my startup self type thing, I'm thinking. Okay, there's another VA one here. This was from my lovely Love Club member, Di. And she said, where's her question? Damn it. So Di says, tips for your first VA hire and how to let go of tasks to onboard successfully. So as I said, I will definitely do an episode on VAs and the kind of different levels of support that you can engage in your business, particularly if you're building a remote team or an outsourced team. However, some tips that I did want to share, I didn't want to keep you hanging too long, my dear Di, is first of all, be crystal clear on what you want them to do, like crystal clear. So there's job description, there's like weekly, you know, when you need them to be online each day. Very, very clear KPIs. You just want to be crystal clear, no room for kind of, vagueness in that at all. The second thing I would say is, well, invest time in training them. So I know for me, one of my biggest weaknesses as a leader is I kind of just assume that people are psychic or telepathic and know exactly what I mean. Thankfully, over the years, the teams who have, people in my team who've worked close with me have somehow managed to develop that. I think AJ's got it right now in my business. Michelle also, whom we were working very closely together, had that too. Danelle's getting there. So, you know, it's that whole thing, particularly if someone's in a different country, potentially they're different language, different culture. You're communicating them purely on email or through some kind of messaging platform or Slack or Asana. You know, it's very, very hard for them to pick up by osmosis what it is you mean and what you want. So investing that time in training them and getting them really, really clear on what it is you want to require them. And also don't forget building a relationship with them. You know, they're not monkeys or robots. Making that time to invest in them, I think, makes a huge, huge difference. And as I said, it's an investment. It's not an expensive time. It's an investment, because the more time you put into someone at the start, and this goes for any employee or any team member, the more you're actually going to both benefit from that relationship on a long-term basis. The third thing I would say as well is to create checks and balances. So whether it's a weekly check-in, or you want them to email you on a Wednesday with an update and any questions that they might have for you if it's a weekly call, whatever it might be, creating some checks and balances. If maybe you're engaging someone to set up your EDM, so your MailChimp or your ActiveCampaign or whatever your CRM emails are, maybe initially you want to have them set them up and send them to you as a test to sign them off. And then over time, as you become really confident and they become confident as well that you know what you want, you can go ahead and get them just to send them. So just thinking about what checks and balances you can create for both of you, just to make sure that you're setting both of you up for success. The fourth thing I would say as well with the VA is to over-communicate, particularly in the early days. You don't want to leave anything to chance. So if it's a check-in each day, and I say this, I used to always say this to even team members when I had kind of a more inverted commas traditional business where we sat around in an office, I would always say to them, look, I'm going to over-communicate with you in the early days and I'd like you to do the same. And I even have that with Danelle, who joined me only, 3 months ago now in my business. I said to her, like, just over-communicate, like check-in more rather than less, because you just don't want to leave any space for assumptions in the early days. Over time, as I said, as you kind of find your groove together, I think that can change. But in the early days, I think, you definitely want to over communicate rather than under communicate. So as I said, I am going to do a separate episode on successful outsourcing and building a virtual team. But I did want to just address those things very quickly there. Okay, another Love Club member, Caitlin. Hello, Caitlin, says, when starting your business, and what order do you need? Accountant, bookkeeper, or lawyer? I think this is a really, really good question, because I know for me, when I started my first business, I was like, oh my God, do I register my business with my lawyer, my accountant? I just didn't know where to start. So based on kind of being in business for the time I have and being on my second business and helping a lot of people start their businesses and grow their businesses, what I would suggest is your first port of call should be your lawyer. So, and the reason for that is you want them to advise you on what your business structure should be. And this can be a really, really costly mistake if you don't get this right. It's just so worth talking to a lawyer and getting this done right from day one. So what I mean by your business structure is if you're registering yourself as a sole trader, if you're registering yourself as a partnership, if you're going into business with someone else, or if you're registering yourself as a PTY Limited, or if the business is going to be owned by, for example, a family trust. So it can get, I mean, it can be really, really simple if you just register yourself as a sole trader and off you go. However, that is, I've seen a few friends, I registered a PTY Limited from day one for both my businesses. However, I've seen friends go through and mentees go through the hoops on this one. Like for some reason, it involves starting new bank accounts and it's just messy. So you want to get that right from day one, as right as you can possibly get it. Another problem I had is that I, myself and Wade, started a family trust a year into my first business, which basically meant that the trust needed to take ownership of the business, the Remarkables Group, which should have been pretty straightforward, but, you know, quality problem, given that the business made so much money in the first year and it was technically valued at quite a bit after 12 months. It then meant that, I mean, my accountant was saying what we actually need to do is your trust needs to buy the business, like literally hand over money for the business. And I was like, fucking hell, what a mess. So just that kind of thing. I wish we had gone with the trust structure from day one and it just would have simplified things a hell of a lot. So yeah, I would talk to your lawyer first about your business structure. Are you going out as a sole trader, as a partnership, as a PTY Limited? Do you need to think about a trust structure? That, yeah, get that clear from day one. The other thing you want your lawyer to look at pretty early on as well is your T's and C's. So whatever kind of product or service you're going to be offering, you're probably going to require some kind of T's and C's. And I wrote about this in my first book, Remarkability. So by the way, if you're thinking about starting a business or you're building the side hustle right now, do check out my first book, Remarkability, because I wrote that pretty much from the front line of starting my first business. I think I wrote it, what was it? 4 years in, I wrote the book 3.5 years into that business. So it's very, very fresh, that book, from being right in that experience. So yeah, I think you'd enjoy it if you're at that point right now in your career. So I did write about this in Remarkability, that I see a huge amount of people investing shitloads in like the pretty logo and agonizing over the right color and their business cards and their website and so on, and just not even giving a second's thought to the T's and C's, the accounts, all that kind of thing. And at the end of the day, that's actually where you want to be spending your money, not covering your ass, but protecting yourself and future customers legally, because that's the stuff that can really come back to bite you on the bum. That's the stuff that gets very, very expensive. Whereas a logo, you can just update every month if you wanted to going forward in your business. So that's where I'd be starting, lawyer, to get your business structure nailed down and to do your T's and C's. And also while you're there, probably getting them to register the company or register your partnership as well. So that said, and moving on to the second person I would speak to is an accountant. So an accountant can also register your business for you. So it totally depends. From my experience, it works out pretty much the same cost to register. And I've registered a few businesses over the years, like JVs and joint ventures that I've done and so on. So I've either used an accountant or a lawyer to do them. So an accountant can also register your business and manage that. The other thing you would probably want your accountant to help you with is advice on software. So what software you should use. I am like zero girl through and through. I've used it in both my businesses and love it. Also to review your T's and C's from an accounting perspective, I think would be quite smart. And also your pay. So how are you going to pay yourself? You know, assuming you're going to make lots of money, how you're going to pay yourself, how's your super going to be structured, your PAYG and so on. So, and also just giving you the one-on-one, if this is your first time paying yourself or paying employees, is the one-on-one and super and how all that works. So really kind of leveraging that accountant as like a consultant almost, just to kind of get you skilled up to get started in business. And then the third person I would be speaking to is a bookkeeper. So that is to actually do the nitty-gritty of setting up your software, whatever you decide to go with. And also, of course, the ongoing bookkeeping. Now, a lot of what I said the accountant could do, your bookkeeper could also do. Like they could also advise you on pay and super, advise you on software and so on. But yeah, if I was to say like they're the three people I would consult in what order, I would start with the lawyer, then I would go to the accountant, and then I would go to the bookkeeper. So hope that answers that, Caitlin. That's a really, really, really good question. Thank you. Okay. Where am I going? Okay. And Carly, another Love Club member, hello lovely, says, do you use any tools or templates to plan your social media content? Okay, so time for full confession time. I am shit at planning my social media content. I'm really good at planning my podcast. This is the most organized content element of my business. And I think the reason for that is that I've got a podcast producer and her team that need it. Then the team needs to have time to upload on the website. So I know that other people are dependent on me getting my podcast done on a Tuesday, for example, in time for the following Friday. And I also do tend to batch my episodes. When I'm really, really good, I've got my episodes batched for kind of 4 or 5 weeks in advance, which is a really, really nice place to be. So I am actually quite shit at this. At the moment, I'm working with my own content calendar that I've built in Google Sheets. And that's got a kind of a line for all of the different platforms and what's going to be focused on that week. When I do so, I am trying to get a lot more diligent at scheduling my social media content. And when I am disciplined, and Danelle has just recently, actually this week, she's been taking over a lot of the scheduling, which is awesome. I use Later for scheduling my content, which is pretty bomb-proof and idiot friendly for me. So yes, Carly, I'm sorry that wasn't a more productive answer, but that is the God's honest truth on that one. And now another question is from Alison AHB. She says, how do you come up with content for your courses and books? And I mean, my biggest answer in this is just to listen. So listening to my audience, what their biggest pain points are. I love my one-on-one mentoring because I just love it. But also I find I dive so deep with people that I really get to know their biggest blocks, challenges, fears, hopes, desires, wishes, all of the things. And that really, so much of my one-on-one work informs what I might go and focus a program on. So not to base it on like one individual person's experience, but what are the kind of common themes that I'm seeing come through in my mentoring work? And also extending that out to my program. So for most of my online programs, I will do some kind of live Q&A or masterclassy type thing. Again, I'm constantly listening in those for what are the biggest questions, what are the biggest blocks. And just to give you a live example of that right now, I have found, so I did 3 group mentoring sessions of one form or another over the previous 2 weeks. And what I really found is affirmations just keeps coming up again and again and again, people wanting to understand how they can leverage affirmations in their lives. So when I was sitting down with AJ last Friday, AJ on my team, and planning out like the next batch of events, I'm actually going to focus an entire event early next year on staying on track with their goals. And a big part of that will be affirmations and helping people design their own affirmations and then how to create an affirmation practice for yourself. So just to give you an example of that, it really does come from listening and almost just putting my antenna up to going, okay, what's going on? What do people want to know more about? And if anyone, for example, says that they enjoyed one of my books, I will always say, oh, what was your biggest takeout? Or what's the biggest thing you've put into practice? Or what was your favorite chapter? So constantly asking and learning and listening to my community is a massive, I mean, that's almost like the vault or the gold mine of where I should be focusing my energies on. So definitely listening to people. And that's, as I said, that's a constant exercise. The other thing, and this probably sounds a bit like a weird answer to this question, but it's really creating that space for the soul whispers, because so many of my books and programs and events and even just little, I call them surprise delights, the little nice things I can do for someone in my community or my mentees or even family, it drops in as like a little soul whisper. And it's just ideas, like it's just a creative spark that comes from somewhere magical. And I actually find a lot of the time I get those little soul whispers when I'm exercising, because I think my body is so focused and my brain is so focused on just getting through the pain of a bar class or sticking with the HIIT class or whatever it is I'm doing. And I find that makes a really big difference because I'm just so engaged that kind of creates the space for the soul whispers to drop in, because my monkey mind isn't going 90 miles an hour as it normally is. So I think creating that space for soul whispers, of course, meditation is a huge help with that, but just time out of nature, walking, trying to be present, not filling every 5 seconds with content, you know, feeling that if we've got a 30 minute space that we need to listen to a podcast or be consuming, just to create that space, as I said, for those soul whispers to drop in. And the other thing I will do as well is sometimes, and I don't do this huge amount because I really love the Henry Ford quote. And he said, if I was to ask people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. So, you know, sometimes when we ask our audience what it is they want, they don't always know, because they they can't envisage the future that we can see as the business owner, the entrepreneur, the visionary, for want of a better word. So, or maybe it's the right word. So I think I won't ever go to my audience, and maybe I might change this, but I haven't to date gone to them and say, hey, what should I write my next book about? Unless it was like a fun conversation. Instead, what I would say is like, hey, I'm thinking about doing an event in August. Should I focus on A or B? And putting that out as a poll on Instagram. I find that that's a lot more beneficial, and it also kind of just narrows people's options a bit as well. So yeah, asking the audience if it's appropriate. And then also just sitting down, like if I do have an idea, it's just sitting down and mapping that out. I just work with an A3 notebook, A5 notebook, or my A3 sketchpad, either or, depending kind of what mood I'm in. And it's just mapping it out. Okay, I've got this program idea. Does it actually have legs? So, you know, could I actually create an 8-week program from this, or a 6-week program? Or, okay, this is the event. Could I actually, you know, is there enough content to put into 2 hours here? So I think it's very helpful for me to kind of weed out the good ideas from the inverted commas bad. If I actually sit there and map it out and see what it looks like when I get it down in black and white as well. And my last, I'm trying to read my scribbles here on these notes. Really big point on this one. And this applies more to online programs or events than it does to books. It's not to give too much away. And I don't mean that from a sense of like a mercenary sense of like, oh, I'm only going to give away so much information for the amount of money you paid me for this. But it's more that, you know, people are very overwhelmed. I see this every single day in my business with my community and my friends and, you know, my own life. People are really, really overwhelmed. And I know for me, when I started doing programs and events, I just want to give them everything because I was just so grateful that they were paying me to do something they're paying to do something with me. And what I really realize is you're almost doing them a disservice because you're contributing to the overwhelm. So I actually think, and I think this is more difficult to do, is to be a lot more selective with the information that we're sharing in programs or books or events or trainings or whatever the hell, workshops, whatever we're doing, because it forces us to really focus on the real nuggets that are really, really going to help them and move their lives forward and teach them about whatever it is our area of expertise is, and not overwhelm them. So my goal with my programs is that I want people to finish them. Like, I don't want them to get to week 3 and go, holy shit, I'm so snowed under with information, I don't even know where to start. It's about getting them to finish it and feeling like they've really achieved something. So I really do believe that someone will get a lot more out of finishing a 6-week program that I create than getting to week 1 and just feeling like, holy shit, she's given me so much information. So if you've ever done one of my programs, you'll know that for example, if it's a weekly video structure, like my Get Remarkably Organized program, which is finishing next week as this episode is going out, what I will do is there's 3 key points that I'll share in each video. So it's not about going on and on for an hour and a half to feel like someone's getting inverted commas value for the money that they've paid. It's about keeping it to a 20-25 minute video that I know people are more likely to finish and that they'll retain those 3 points that I've shared. So I did want to touch on that. It's a little bit beyond the scope of that question, but yeah, I think it's a really, really important point. And a lot of people that I know, whether it's mentees or so on, are actually starting to create their own online programs. And I've been working with them a lot. And I do want to pass that one on to everyone, because as I said, it was a tempting one for me. And I think it's one to avoid, because ultimately it does our audience a disservice. Okay. Woo! Okay. Yada bars. I think this is another one for you, my dear. From you, how to transition from doing it all yourself to delegating, hiring help, to building a team. This is such a good question. I've actually got a really good tool for you. If you jump onto my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au, you will find the resources tab at the top of the page. And in there, just drop your email in there and you'll get access to all my worksheets. And I've got a tool in there called the Time Task Audit. And what you will do, if you download that, it's actually an Excel spreadsheet. And what it asks you to do is list every single thing that you do. And just remember, you can use this for your job. You can use this for your side hustle, for your business, for home life, anything you have going on in your life. So you identify, so you put every single task that you do line by line going down this Excel spreadsheet. So row by row by row. And then you'll see you've got 4 columns. So those columns are either continue. So continue doing those things. So you just put an X in the relevant column. Stop doing it because it's actually not adding value for you or anyone else. The next one is outsource it. And the last one is to delegate it. So there are your 4 options. So you want to go through each of those items line by line and then just drop an X into the most relevant column for you. So as I said, I call it the time task audit. So I will often do this if I find that I'm getting kind of snowed under. We did it recently when we were hiring Danelle. AJ did a review of her time and saw, okay, what should she continue doing versus what could we delegate to someone else? And what you will find then when you do this task, you'll find that the outsource column and the delegate column essentially becomes the job description for your next hire. Whether that's outsource, it's going to be hiring like an outsource member of your team, or if it's delegate, that's going to be delegating to someone within your team or within your family, or, you know, whatever it is, an associate, whatever it might be, a colleague. So I find that tool works really, really, really well. And I think the great thing is it shows me what's the most, what are the most burning items? Like, what's the thing that I need to hand over right now? Because I know if I hand that thing over, it's going to free up a lot more space for me to focus on all the other things. And then it becomes almost like shedding the layers of an onion. You know, as you go through, your business makes more money, your side hustle makes more money, your team grows, you've got more things that you can start to hand over. So that was the tip that I wanted to share with you. And I'll pop a link to that resources page in the show notes for this episode as well. Okay, I think I have covered all my questions. Have I? Let me do a quick check. Oh no, one more question from Caitlin. Caitlin says, how has she phrased this now so I can ask it in her language? She has said, where is it? Okay. Do you recommend focusing on building your Instagram community or email list at the start? I love this question. So what I would definitely say is email. So this is one of my kind of, I wouldn't call them regrets, but one of the things I would do differently if I did it again, particularly with this business I'm in now, mostly actually with this business I'm in now, is to grow my email list. So to make a concerted effort to consistently grow my email list. So a really great way that I got a bit of a head start on my email list is creating the resources that people go on my website to download when they read any of my three books. There's buckets of resources in each of those three books, which I love creating for people. So, but other than that, it's been very kind of just drip feed through. I get a bit of a burst if I do an event or a program, or of course, someone shares something about me in their own email newsletter. But yeah, I really wish I had made a concerted effort to create something ongoing to build, you know, I talk about as an always on email list building exercise. And of course, the main way that you're going to do that is through paid social media ads. So if you listen to my Get Remarkably Organized program debrief, I talked in that episode about getting over my block around having paid social media ads about myself. And based on the success and how well those ads performed for us for the program launch, we've now just Friday, actually, so a week ago, as you're listening to this episode, if you're listening to it on the day it comes out, we started, we went live with our always on list building exercise, which means that we've got something out there that we're constantly inviting people to come and join my email list. So right now, the first cab off the rank, what we've created, it's called a lead magnet. Like, why are people going to join your email list? It's because you're going to give something in return. So for me, what I've created is it's my to-do list template and then a 10-minute tutorial on how to actually use that. So if you want to get that, actually just jump to my profile in my Instagram and you can grab that as well. I'll pop a link to that in my show notes as well. So yeah, that always on. And I was just chatting to AJ today. I mean, the spend's been pretty minimal so far. And I've got 50 new email addresses in just 3 days. So, you know, it just does make a big difference doing that always on. That said, yeah, and the reason why I would prioritize email if I was to kind of have a do-over is that you don't have any certainty with social media. You can't control who's going to see your content. You particularly with Facebook, I know as Facebook brought in their paid, essentially having to pay to get access to your audience if you're a business owner, I saw that really hit our influencers very, very hard, because until then they were getting quite strong organic reach and then they had to start paying for their reach, and it was pretty much you had to pay to get access to your own audience, which, you know, is fair enough. Facebook needs to monetize it as well. So yeah, you don't have the certainty. And I really see that, I like putting as one of our old influencers in the Remarkables group used to say, that we're essentially renting access to these audiences in Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and so on, whereas we own our audience when it comes to email. So it's almost like the difference between owning your own home and renting someone else's home. However, I do think it's a bit chicken and egg. Like, it's through Instagram that people are going to find you, and therefore then they're more likely to sign up to your email address. So your email list. So I think it is quite chicken and egg, but if I did start again, I would be a lot more diligent with growing my email list and having it always on and getting over my ridiculous blocks around my fear of social media a lot sooner. Okay. And I think this is my last question, and it is from Carly says, how do you plan your marketing and promotions? This is such a good question. So as I said, I will focus at some point on how I do my business planning. Maybe not for this season. So how I do it is, first of all, everything starts with the annual plan. So what are the key kind of thrusts for the year that I'm going to be focusing on? Then it gets broken down to the quarterly plan. So that 90-day plan in terms of, okay, what am I focusing on? And what needs to happen in order for that to be put together? And I've got like a one-page quarterly plan that I use in my business. Okay, then the next thing that I do is I put all of that information on that it's a Word document, put that into a quarterly timeline. So that breaks down the quarter week by week over whatever, 12 weeks. And is that right? Yeah, 12 weeks. And it breaks down week by week what needs to happen when. So it almost like plots all those actions onto a weekly timeline. So that tends to keep us on track pretty much for launches. However, with the likes of the Get Remarkably Organized program launch, because it was so epic, what we actually did is we had a separate timeline, and there was separate like email schedule, there was content calendars, there was like a beast of a Google sheet for that one. So, but yeah, the overall structure is know what I'm doing each year, break it down per quarter, whatever that quarterly plan is, then get that to live in a weekly timeline, and then create individual timelines for the bigger launches. They will go in there. Okay, my friends, I think I have covered all of those questions. It was really interesting just seeing the themes that came through, like a lot of questions around outsourcing, managing the side hustle, and also planning as well, which is pretty, pretty cool. So it's really helpful for me because I know obviously what to focus on for future, whether it's masterclasses or it's future podcast episodes as well. Okay, I'll pop all the links to the resources that I mentioned into the show notes. And of course, if you've got any feedback, I would love to hear it on this episode. If you've got feedback on the episode, I would love to hear it. And also just remembering, if you would like to inquire about one-on-one mentoring with me, I'll pop the link to that in the show notes as well. But you can find all the info on lorrainemurphy.com.au. Okay, I will leave you there. As always, thank you so much for listening. And I hope my, that was a pretty power hour of answering questions. And I hope that you found a nugget in there for you, or maybe even a couple of nuggets for your business and where you're going with your plans. Okay, that's it for me. Much love for this week. And I will chat to you again next week. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is @LorraineRemarks, and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.